Bueno, pues Manifesta 8 está ya abierta al público y esta Bienal Europea del Arte Contemporáneo.
Da Murcia e Cartagena, lo speciale di Radio Papesse. Manifesta 8.
Mira, todos tenemos que poner un poco de nuestra parte. O al menos hacer un esfuerzo por conservar un mínimo de dignidad profesional. Obviamente, es muy importante que seamos conscientes de todas las repercusiones sociogeográficas de participar en semejante evento cultural transnacional, así como de los riesgos de convertirse en partícipes involuntarios de algo que podría ser visto como un caso de colonialismo cultural. ¿Cómo? Digo...
Hello, we're Common Culture, which consists of Mark Durden, Ian Brown and myself, David Campbell. And the piece of work we have on exhibition in Manifesta is called The New El Dorado, which is our response to the request to respond to the specifics of making work within Murcia. And we were conscious of the fact of how, as artists, we could respond to Murcia. To some extent, it's an ironic reflex in relation to how we might make work with a level of engagement which is fairly superficial. So to some extent it's about preconceptions. It's about preconceptions of the area, but also the idea that traditionally there has been a historical background to the notion of people from England coming to Spain. Often it's been through the idea of the Grand Tour, which would be a process where people become enlightened to kind of foreign ways, but also culture. But more recently, the idea of British tourists coming to Murcia and the stereotypes we generate from that, both in terms of the Spanish stereotype, but also the English stereotype. And the other thing would be the relationship of a kind of the cultural machine whereby big art, biennales, travel the world or erupt in certain places. And there is expectation of some kind of engagement with local communities. We see that as kind of slightly problematic. And in one way, we wanted to ironize that relationship. And we wanted to adopt a form which would include, as an aesthetic consideration, the notion of irony. So there's a sense of awkwardness. Hence, we use the model of a 1970s discotheque as a way of speaking about that notion of whether something fits in, the awkwardness. And we play around in kind of Brechtian strategies in terms of drawing attention to the mechanics of this attempt to engage with the local community. Manifesta is a brand. It's a kind of franchise which moves around, and to some extent we're really grateful to have the opportunity to be part of that. But at the same time, we have had a body of work recently which has looked at the idea of commodification, and in particular the idea of commodity form in terms of forms of social labour. So we've done work in the past which has worked with nightclub bouncers, security, or comedians. So that commodification is not just about object, but it's also about the objectification of social relationships. And we're implicated in that as artists, that in a way Common Culture is a brand, a highly unsuccessful brand, but a brand nonetheless. And to some extent we're a kind of commodity, and we wanted to reflect upon our own relationship within a system of consumption. I mean, people are coming here from all around the world to consume art, and they're coming in a very small way to consume our art. So we're acutely conscious of our role as a commodity, as we are of the relationship to the actors that we use. We developed a kind of way of working which we're completely honest with the actors in terms of what we want to do. And the awkwardness of English artists trying to make a work in Spain is highlighted through acts of translation or mistranslation. One of the things that we've always used is the sense of a particular notion to do with comedy, whether it's ironic in terms of an English humour. We wanted to see how comedy is able to facilitate certain negotiations about social relationships. So we deliberately set up kinds of narrative and script which are clearly English, but when they're enunciated in Spanish, there is a kind of clash, and you're not quite sure how authentic this is. So it's about that collision of different kinds of cultures. As artists coming here, using actors who ventriloquise our language, certain references which are autobiographic, and yet it's in the context of Manifesta in Murcia. And out of that kind of heady brew, hopefully we produce something which is both reflective in terms of the circumstances, but also humorous.
Precisamente este tipo de personas son las que te hacen de cualquier tipo de arte una fiesta. Son como una nación de zombies ambulantes. que se abalanzan sobre ti donde quiera que vayas para devorar nuevas experiencias. Son implacables, jodidamente implacables.
It has been established beyond doubt that events like this bring money to the city and attract a better class of tourist, cultural tourists. They spend more, cause less trouble, and are better looking than the tourists on the coast.
Common Culture don't have a studio. We function largely through social contact, through meeting up occasionally, but also through emails. So there is a sense of the kind of dialogue, which is slightly disconnected because that's the way we deal with things through emails. So it actually allows a kind of disjuncture to take place in terms of how we construct scripts, because there are many voices. We're also aware of the fact that there is a temptation for readers or viewers to make assumptions that this is autobiographic, and we play with that. Sometimes we seed things which seem to suggest that we're speaking, but then other times we're conscious of that and we deliberately put in things which are red herrings or false positions. The kind of multi-layered aspect is something that we're interested in because we want to raise the issue of authenticity, cultural authenticity, about who speaks, how you speak, particularly in relation to the piece that we've done for Manifesta, which is about the assumption that we can have any authentic engagement with a visitor to Merthyr for a few days and make any significant artwork. We believe that we can't. We believe that there's a kind of level of patronisation. You can't get around. So therefore you have to embed that in the kind of script that we produce. So we deliberately wanted a strategy which had many, many voices, some of which are ours, but we're not unified in our own identities anyways. So there are many ways in which we deal with the idea of different kind of voices. That sense of the multi-layered allows vernacular culture to be engaged, but also theoretical culture. We are intellectuals, and we're not embarrassed to say that we're intellectuals. But at the same time, we have a kind of day-to-day connection, as everybody else has, with vernacular culture and popular culture. And it's that mixing of the two, the kind of multi-layered aspect, which we're really interested in. It's a kind of dynamic. I mean, the choice to call ourselves Common Culture has that ambiguity, because on one hand, it could be interpreted as a very, very kind of positive thing, which is about the shared, the community, the idea of the people, the idea of the communality of experience. But within English, it is tinged with the sense of common being a derogatory term. It's to do with something being associated with being vulgar. So it has a kind of political dimension within English, the idea of common culture. On one hand, it's a kind of political position of support with and for the people, but at the same time, it is used within a very demarcated class culture of England in terms of a derogatory sense of common being vulgar. So we're aware of that and we play with that. I mean, all of us in terms of our own social background come from the working class, and yet we're involved in an intellectual activity. And are academics, and we write books, and we have exhibitions. So the kind of movement and fluidity of the idea of what common means is one of the things that we're interested in. That it isn't, we don't accept the idea that it's either just to do with the people or it's to do with a derogatory term. It's about how class is actually articulated. And I think increasingly we're becoming more interested in the kind of narratives which we stage those kinds of collisions. And we were quite particular when we selected the actors. We asked to give us a sense of the class characteristics of the actors, so that the intonation of their voice would carry class connotations for Spanish listeners, which we, obviously, as English speakers, are completely oblivious to. But we wanted that sense of class difference to be articulated at the level of enunciation of the Spanish actors.
Pero cómo te has puesto esos zapatos?
¿Qué tienen de malo?
Míralos.
Tú no sabes nada de moda, ¿eh? Son italianos.
¿Compraste esos zapatos en Italia?
Sí, me costaron una pasta. Es piel italiana.
Pues te robaron.
La verdad es que sí que me robaron.
¿Cómo dices?
Que me robaron la última vez que estuve allí.
Dímelo a mí. Pagué 12 euros por una cerveza.
No, en serio, que me robaron en la calle.
¿Pero quién?
Yo qué sé, alguien de allí.
La verdad es que no parecen muy buenos, ¿eh?
No. Y además, no terminan de pegar con el resto del conjunto. A tu look le falta unidad.
Creía que habría chicas bailando.
El presupuesto no les daba para tanto.
Serán agarrados.
Bueno, no hace falta que nos pongamos así. A mí me basta con que me hayan dado el trabajo.
¿Pero tú te estás dando cuenta de lo que estamos haciendo?
Bueno, pues yo creo que está bien que se fijen en el talento local.
Pero si tú no eres de aquí.
Bueno, está bien que usen un equipo de producción local.
Lo que pasa es que nosotros somos más baratos.
Bueno, a mí me parece bien.
Y a mí también.
Pero bueno, ¿vosotros estáis tontos o qué? Vosotros limitaros a hacer un buen trabajo. Que no me puedo permitir perder este dinero.
Tranquilo, que nos van a pagar de todas formas.
Pero si no saben distinguir un buen actor de un mal actor. Además, no entienden ni lo que decimos.
Mira, yo soy un profesional.
Bueno, tú limítate a hacerlo bien.
Oye.
¿Y tú no tienes que estar en...
Oye.
¿Qué?
¿Por qué le has invitado?
¿Yo? Yo no le he invitado. Pensé que lo habías hecho tú.
¿Yo? No. No. ¿Por qué iba a hacerlo?
¿Cómo eres tú el que se codea con las clases obreras?
No se trata de clases sociales. Es solo que no me gusta pasar el rato con borrachos empedernidos que hacen cualquier cosa por ganarse un polvo y que siempre acaban peleándose. Aparte de todo eso, es bastante aburrido.
Bah, en eso estoy de acuerdo.
Para eso viene. No le interesa el lugar ni la riqueza cultural. Pues entonces que se vuelva a su casa. Total, no habla el idioma y tampoco le gusta la gente de aquí.
Mirad la mierda que están dando en esta fiesta.
En eso tienes razón. No sé por qué...
The idea of the kind of vulgarity, if you like, could be used as a mechanism in which people are unsettled in terms of their responses to things. In some of the sets, we talk about kind of French philosophy, we talk about Deleuze, we talk about the indignity of speaking for others. And it's dealt with in the situation of a 1970s disco, in which people on one hand are talking about French philosophy, but at the same time are checking out women in the audience. The idea of vulgarity can be used as a mechanism to disrupt things, disrupt expectations of what, say, an intellectual is, or what an intellectual practice might be. We're really interested in the idea of kind of fluidity to contest those definitions. And vulgarity is often a way of doing it. I mean, in terms of kind of theorization, I mean, the idea of the carnivalesque, yeah, where certain kind of moments are disrupted, is a really interesting thing. And I think increasingly in the work that we're doing, which involves script, many of the kind of scripts that we're producing are quite carnivalesque and playful and disruptive. And social conventions are suspended or temporarily suspended to be replaced by other kind of propositions. And I think that idea of fluidity and the idea of using vulgarity as a weapon, but it could also become something which backfires, that we're just seen as the intellectuals who can slum it.
The thing that's explored in this piece is there is a vulgarity about all levels, about how something is demonstrated, about a real need to try and seem intellectual is as vulgar as anything else. So there's a kind of equivalent played out in the different types of vulgarity.
¿Recuerdas a los africanos ilegales trabajadores que hemos visto esta mañana en la gasolinera? Los que estaban siendo vigilados por la policía.
Sí, 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 me acuerdo.
¿Te acuerdas?
Sí.
Pues estaban esperando al patrón para abalanzarse sobre él, para ser explotados todo el puto día recogiendo verdura, la que luego tú compras en el supermercado. ¡Eso es compromiso! Dime, ¿qué clase de compromiso podríamos hacer por ellos? También podemos ir a Inglaterra, ¿eh? Y preguntarle a cualquier empleado de una tienda qué opina sobre los salarios mínimos. O mejor aún, ¿por qué no le preguntamos a los grandes, maravillosos reyes de la ley por qué hacen la vista gorda ante una explotación evidente e ilegal que está pasando delante de sus propias narices y que no hacen nada para evitarlo? ¿Eh? Ah, dime, ¿qué significa ahora para ti la palabra compromiso?
¡No lo sé!
¡Ah, no lo sabe!
¡No, no lo sé!
Ah,
so the cliche of exploitation. I mean, one of the things that we did when we came here on our information finding, when we had a look around and saw what we could do here, was we listened to people. So that particular reference to immigrant workers was a story which was told to us by somebody in Merthyr. And we incorporated that into the text as if it was our voice, but in a way, we're just simply collage and bricolage of different kinds of voices into that thing. So in one sense, we don't know whether that's true or not. We didn't see the African workers. But we thought it was interesting that somebody would relay that story to us as if it was indicative of a particular kind of situation in Merthyr. We don't know whether there's African workers. We don't know whether they're exploited. But in a way, we customised the story by making reference to English workers in supermarkets back in England, just to make it grounded. But it's a kind of story you'd hear in a million places. But we were interested in the fact that it was a ready-made story given to us by somebody who lives and works here.
Hablar con ellos, preguntarles qué tal ha sido su experiencia, tratar de averiguar qué se siente al ser un trabajador ilegal, utilizar las obras de arte para transmitir sus sentimientos.
¿Transmitir sus sentimientos?
Sí, transmitir lo que sienten, contar su historia.
Pero esta no es su historia, debería ser nuestra historia. Nosotros somos los que deberíamos sujetar las cámaras. Todo depende de quién sujeta la cámara. ¿Y qué acabaríamos siendo? Otro arte de mierda que satisface la obsesión voyerista de una clase sofisticada por el poder económico y cultural de quien lo cree.
We are acutely conscious of that, and hopefully the film articulates that in the sense that we talk about this idea of whose voice is being spoken. When that reference to the African workers is made, it's about, well, one of the protagonists talks about what would you do? How would you engage with this person? Make art, use the camera, make films, tell them about their experience. So in one sense, that is us kind of reflecting about our own position implicated in that structure, in that system of tourism, and in a way, cultural colonialism. So I mean, I think there are spaces, critical distances, but you can't get too distant from it. I mean, you are implicated in it. You have to try and find pockets in which moments of criticality, reflection, observation, might yield new observations. And I think that's the best you can hope, the idea that there are pockets whereby certain fissures open up, but it's an all-encompassing system in which you're involved with as well.
Arte, el gran redentor. Bueno, el arte es algo universal. Une a gentes y a culturas diferentes.
Basura, es otro tipo de colonialismo. Y lo único que hace es defender, con la boca pequeña, los intereses de las comunidades locales.
¿Y qué puedes hacer para evitar eso?
¿No se iba a convertir este lugar en un casino?
¿Este lugar?
Sí, sí. Si no es muy distinto.
Well, I guess to concur with the idea that it doesn't have to take a kind of a format, the practice, which is kind of recognized as something that has engagement or interactivity, to be something which has a public, a relationship between the artwork and the public. I think that's a misnomer. I guess that there seems to be a lot of work produced which, because it has a level of interactivity, the assumption is that then it's engaging the people at kind of an equivalent level about certain aspects, and I think that's an assumption that's a dangerous one. So I think we're not necessarily interested in that formal take on the relationship between kind of artwork and public.
The term public has to be understood in its plural sense, that there are kind of many publics, and that the publics might be the physical people who are in a particular place, but it might be a community of interests. And I think one of the things that we try to deal with through this kind of slide of different cultural references is to try and kind of magnetically pull different fields of interest across each other so that they encounter each other. Again, this idea of a collision. We've done a number of projects. One is a piece that we did called Local Comics, which deliberately took the idea that within a globalized culture, you probably listen to the same kind of music, perhaps watch the same kind of films in Siena as maybe we do in England. The idea that there's a kind of shared community, but that there are perhaps distinct differences to do with where you are in Siena, your kind of background and our background. And I think we're interested in the possibility of, within a global culture, what pockets of resistance or residual identities are able to take place, and it's around those things that definitions of public might be reconstructed. I mean, we have no problem with working with the idea that people are not going to wander in off the street and necessarily engage with our work, but all kinds of people might engage with it in other kinds of ways to do with the way that we set it up. It's not about the physicality of contact, it's about utilizing certain forms of reception or certain patterns of communication which are both specific to our way of working, but are kind of universal in the sense of a global culture. So we use reference to 1970s disco, which almost everybody in the world will have some knowledge of as a kind of cliche or as a stereotype. So it's about that idea of, you know, publics for us is plural, it's multiple. And it's the idea that they're to be constructed. And because of our interest in colliding different kinds of cultures, the possibility of new cultures being produced. The structure in which the form of humour is placed has certain kind of possibilities where there are other readings made available. And we've deliberately tried to play with that. We use humour as a mechanism, as a device, because one, we enjoy it. We think that it is a very powerful vehicle to deal with social issues. And at the same time, it has a role to play in the breaking of the stereotypes to do with intellectualism and the idea of serious art. We're interested in serious art, which is humorous. It's funny how the two terms seem to sit in opposition to each other, but we make serious art, but we do it through the device of humour.
I think there's also a kind of a long-standing tradition of using humour to deal with things that we don't find comfortable and don't find easy to deal with, embarrassment and awkwardness. So it's not simply the idea of humour as being on a superficial level, but actually as a reaction to something that we don't want to hear. And we're really interested in how humour can kind of do that.
Tenemos que estar atentos a los intercambios de poder en todo lo que hacemos. La micropolítica del discurso. ¿Quién tiene y quién no tiene la capacidad para hablar? Después de todo, ¿no fue Deleuze el que hablaba de algo fundamental? La humillación de hablar por los demás.
Oye, ¿esa no es la chica que salía en aquel anuncio que decía que este lugar era maravilloso?
Sí, 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 es ella. ¡Qué buena que está!
Pues no parece la misma que la del anuncio de televisión.
¿Cómo? ¿Que esa es la chica del anuncio de televisión?
Para, que se va a dar cuenta que estamos hablando de ella.
Algunos actores no son tan guapos como en la vida real.
It's clear that the performers haven't been well briefed. Maybe there was a misunderstanding. Doing it in Spanish hasn't helped. Relying on translation all the time is unsatisfactory. Clearly they were confused by what roles they were supposed to be playing. Their dancing was pretty terrible, and their attempt at a fight even worse. One might also question whether their idea of comedy can be seen as redemptive and an adequate counterpoint to the cynicism. Did they really imagine it would turn out like this?
Radio Papesse è un progetto curato da Ilaria Gadens e Carola Haupt.